Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Well, it's time for some more thoughts about our lives online, and that must mean this is Outriders and that Jamila is here. Jamila, what's on the menu this week?
Hello, Rod. This week we consider a whole day without email. We learn about a new place for your data online and try our best to remember what we were doing this time last year.
Intriguing, to say the least. What's first, then?
Well, first, let's learn about something nice and new. Now, many of us are present on all sorts of social networks. You might still have accounts active on MySpace and Facebook and Twitter, and then photos on TwitPic and YFrog and Instagram, and as well as audio here and there. But it's a big fat mess, really, when it comes to years and years of posting your lives online. What do you do when you want to find everything? Well, practically fresh out of the box is Singly. It was launched last week at the Web 2.0 conference, and its mission online is to give us some control over our data and keep it all in one place. Jason Kavner is one of the co-founders of Singly, and he told me all about it.
We are a personal data platform that lets you pull in and own a copy of all the information that you generate digitally in any format. That could be your social data, that could be your browsing data, your purchase data, your health data. We just think as we create more and more data, people are going to want a copy of that, easy access to it, and also that the applications we use should sort of run on top of that data.
Basically, it seems that this gives us a lot more control where we may have been working on other social media networks where we're not even sure if we can get our data back or erase it if we want.
I think that's right. I think in some degrees, control is something that we want people to have in the sense that they at least are aware of what data exists in other places. I don't think the technical possibility of expunging or deleting the information you have left in other places is possible at this point in time, but at least giving people an awareness and empowering them with that awareness is step one.
How easy will it be to use Singly? It's often said, usually by developers, that if you want control over your data online, then write your own programs and do it yourself. But to the average user, that just sounds like a bit of a nightmare, doesn't it?
Singly is an open source project that is built by developers, for developers, with the thinking that they can go and aggregate their information and they can keep that, copy that information on their local server or EC2 instance that they spin up. But for normal people like myself, for you, it's not possible. So what Singly does is we take that software, that operating package, if you will, and we put it up in the cloud, we host it securely, and we run it for and with you and I. And so we take the work that developers could do for themselves and we empower people with that as well.
More cynically, you could say, well, I've thrown my lot in with whichever popular social network. Why would I trust you more? Because in a way, you're going to be hosting my data instead. I can access
Absolutely.
It, but I
Absolutely.
Need to trust
yeah.
you.
So I think the quick answer to that is, and it's a much broader topic because trust ends up being sort of a foundational component to our business and really the only reason that anybody should engage with us. But on a foundational level, the fact that we are building this as open source basically makes it so that other competitors of ours will actually hopefully use the same technology. So if you're not happy with us, what we're really trying to do is create an ecosystem of, personal data storage providers. If you're not happy with us, then hopefully an ecosystem of competitors allow you to take your data, move it elsewhere, and that the applications that you've come to know and love and experience through us across the web are still things that you can run even if your data has moved.
Thinking about the applications that could be built, then it's quite exciting thinking that developers could build something that's very useful that may not have passed muster with whichever social media site. So they're allowed to play with the data, as it were. But is there also a danger? Quite often you see in apps markets for, say, the mobile market, that you get a dodgy app sometimes and you've clicked on it, but you don't know what that's actually going to do to your data or sometimes your computer.
Another value that I think people will come to provide in this ecosystem and one that we'll address pretty early, which is, where your data lives is one thing and how you get it all together is one thing. Another thing is who protects you as you try to sort of engage in the world with that data. And so, as long as it's hosted with us, that we will be sort of verifying that the experiences that you are spreading your data to are trustworthy. We'll make sure, very sure that it's explicit what data you're sharing out to those things. And anything that is sort of code that you would be running in your own space that you're pulling in, experiences that sort of run inside Singly for you, we will certainly vet it and verify it. So that'll be a big component of ours, is making sure that you're safe and secure. And then I think other people, you know, developers, if they want to run their personal data store on their home machine, they'll need to either sort of install a similar proposition that protects them, or they would need to sort of at their own discretion let those applications into their user space.
If I want to start my Singly account and be more aware of where my data is, that I own it, does this work from the generation of data and then I choose to put this on the site as well, is a sharing point, or is it something that you can actually take from, say, Facebook or MySpace or Twitter and drag that in from them?
So the idea is to let you, you know, all the data you're creating, you know, none of the social providers like argue that that data is your data, and this just makes it easy for you to get a copy of it. You know, there will be other types of data, I think, that we'll enable in the future, other types of applications we'll enable in the future where you can also publish out from or you know, use Singly to do that. But I think primarily at this point in time, we're interested in helping you reclaim a copy of different things that you've done and use those things in a developer experience or an application experience that gives you reason to have a copy of your data locally.
And so do you think this will help us all be a little bit more aware of our output as well?
I think so. And I think the argument can actually be made that we will share more because we feel more in control, more knowledgeable about how that works. And I think over time we'll see that we both feel empowered by our data. We feel empowered to share. And all of that kind of gets set up by being, you know, sort of feeling more in control of what's going on.
If we'd like to find out a bit more about this, where do we look online?
People can go to our website, singly.com. We'd love for people to register. Let us know that they'd like early access. At the moment, it's largely developers that are being let in so they can improve the system and provide more rich experiences for when people like you and I get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, like, we'd love for people to also kind of just take up the issue more broadly with their friends and in social circles, talking about how we're living, you know, we're sort of defining how we're living as a people in real time using technology. And at the moment, data about us is built into quite literally everything that we do, from our car to our home appliances, which are coming online, to everything in between. And I think the idea of, like, just starting a conversation and starting to feel empowered by data, wanting that data, would be another way that I hope people can engage in.
Interesting. So what about the things you were doing online a long time ago?
Ah, well, there's something fun this week for that too. Rod, can you remember what you were doing at this exact time on this day last year?
If it was a Monday, I could give you a fairly good idea. But beyond that, no, that's probability. But I have no memory of it at all.
I often have trouble pretty much remembering what I was doing yesterday. So a little program that runs together with location and activity logging application Foursquare sends you a reminder of where you were and what you were doing each day a year ago. Jonathan Wegener runs Foursquare and 7 years ago. You can see what they did there. And I think he explains it all a little bit better than I do.
Foursquare and 7 years ago is a daily email. You wake up every morning to an email telling you what you did this day last year. And so it's a way of resurfacing your past with a 1 year delay.
And so what made you decide to do this?
We were thinking of ideas for the Foursquare Hackathon back in February. Foursquare in New York hosted their first ever Foursquare Hackathon. We were interested in building something, and we kind of had two different ideas, and one of them, it was inspired by seeing a similar service for Twitter where someone had built a resurfacing of old tweets where you could follow yourself a year ago. I've been thinking about what that would look like for Foursquare and decided it would be interesting. And the original product that we tried to build was supposed to be the Mario Kart ghost for the real world. Or in Mario Kart the game, there's a level where you race against yourself from the last lap, and it puts a ghost of yourself and your past performance on top of your present. It's the semi-transparent version of yourself, and you can see whether you're beating your last lap or whether you're, you know, whether you're falling behind your previous record. We are intending to build that for Foursquare, and the idea would be that you would make a second Foursquare account. On our side, we would feed this Foursquare account with your old data, and you would be friends with your year-ago self, and you could watch your year-ago self check in around the city. You could watch out the window as, like, year ago self checks in at the coffee shop across the street. Their year ago self just keeps popping up, and wow, like, suddenly the ghost of myself, like, I'm in the same place at the same time I was a year ago. Wow, that's crazy. As a simplification of this product, we decided to just make it a daily email that told you about your year ago.
I guess it depends on how people decide they want to use Foursquare, because if you're not a great and regular user, then you're either going to get no email or an empty email, or indeed your ghost's not really going to exist in the same way. Do you think this is more suitable for heavier users?
There's that cold start problem where if you sign up today for our service, we won't have anything to show you unless you've been using Foursquare for a year. So even if you sign up for Foursquare and Foursquare in 7 years ago, we won't have anything for a full year to show you because you have to produce the content. So it's definitely more suited for people who have been using Foursquare for a while. We've had users even count down until they can get their Foursquare in 7 years ago email.
What sort of feedback are you getting? Have there been people who were in the same place at the same time last year?
Yes, we had someone, in fact, on their first day ever getting their email us and say, you won't believe this, but I'm in the exact same place I was a year ago. It wasn't his workplace either. It was a place he didn't go very often. We originally had planned with the ghost analogy when we were thinking of that service, we were trying to figure out what would happen. Should we make a celebration? Should play a song? Like, should we email you and congratulate you on being in the same room as your ghost? Just last night, I had a kind of a crazy experience where I was talking to an old friend at a party, and he mentioned that he's just started getting his Foursquare in 7 years ago emails because he really wasn't a big Foursquare user until about a year ago. And he said, today my email had check-ins at the Excellent Dumpling House, which is a dumpling house in New York City. And I said, really? Me too? And we pulled open our emails and compared them, and it turns out we had lunch together exactly this day a year ago. We weren't even Foursquare friends at the time, so it didn't log that we were in the same place at the same time.
Do you think that it's easy enough for people on various platforms to get a hold of their own data so that they can, I guess, think about things like what was I doing a year ago, or play with the data that they've been putting online for? I mean, some of us had various social network profiles for many years, so there's loads of data that we could do lots of fun things with, but it just seems a little bit hard sometimes to get hold of that.
You're absolutely right. It's hard, and that's what we're working on. I mean, we're building this into a larger service that goes way beyond Foursquare because it's been so popular and because people have told us how much they love the concept and the product and how this is the one email a day that they let email them and that they read. And so we're expanding this, and we're working on pulling in data from all sorts of sources. Even normal people who aren't checking in 1,000 times a day on Foursquare and aren't these early adopter types, maybe who have never even heard of Foursquare, are producing content that is interesting to be resurfaced a year later or several years later.
So if we want to have a go at this, where can we best find out more online?
You can find it at foursquareand7yearsago.com. That's the number 4, square, and the number 7yearsago.com.
And just to make sure that we all know and find out, who thought of the name?
The name was my idea. We were sitting in a bar the night before we built it, and we were trying to figure out what's historical, what's historical. And I turned to my friend Benny, my co-founder Benny, and said, what's that old phrase, like 4 score and something? And he said, it's 4 score and 7 years ago. It's the Abe Lincoln phrase. And I said, so why don't we call it 4 square and 7 years ago? And that's what we named it. So when we launched it, several people were like, that's a mouthful, but they quickly began to appreciate it and appreciate the pun.
Now, Rod, do you find your email inbox to be an insurmountable horror, or is the horror in the idea that you would not, for any reason, be able to check your email whenever you like?
Oh, very much the former. I'm one of those people who look at my email with just unmitigated fear, actually. Yeah.
Well, could we give up our email for a day? It's a question that I threw out on Twitter to see what our outriders out there might think about it, and almost immediately Ernmander got back to say, yep, I could. I tend to take a day in the week where I don't open email, so I have a day to clear my desk and in-tray. I normally pick a Thursday where work-related emails are left unopened, and they're fully caught up with on Friday. It may not be a conventional thing to do, but I find it helps productivity. Now, as a self-confessed email addict myself, I met this with horror and, of course, asked him what his colleagues and his clients think about this activity. And he said, it all works out well. I made sure that it's well known. The telephone line is always open and human face-to-face, of course. To be honest, it's refreshing to stand face-to-face and talk about what needs doing rather than bouncing emails back and forth.
So, he's
a good candidate there for the no-email day. So that's coming up. And IT professional and social media expert Paul Lancaster is encouraging all of us to consider our email use by not using it for a day. I asked him to tell me more.
It's all about trying to get people all around the world to give up email completely for 24 hours on the 11th of November so that they can focus on their real work rather than just the busy work.
You work in IT, and surely you must use a lot of email as it stands. So why did you decide to start this campaign?
Some people actually think that I'm some kind of Luddite or technophobe, and a few people think that I mustn't work in IT or mustn't have a real job, but that can be further from the truth. Just before Christmas last year, I just realised that every time someone sends you an email, they're actually giving you another bit of work to do. So every email that you read, reply to, delete, or mark as spam, it's actually a task to do. It sounds really obvious, but I just kind of thought this is crazy. And then every time I'm sending an email to someone, I'm contributing to the problem. So I made a concerted effort to try and get a zero inbox, get rid of all of my emails, because every email that starts in your inbox is a little reminder of something that you've still got to do. So I managed to get my inbox down to zero for the first time in about 10 years, just before Christmas. I didn't just delete the emails, it meant that I actioned every single one. So anything that was read and didn't need anything further doing was deleted. All our emails were filed away. So I did that for the first time, and it felt absolutely amazing, like a huge weight off my shoulders to have a blank, empty inbox. Didn't last for long, and then a quick succession of emails came through. But I didn't manage to get my inbox down to zero again for another 4 months. Since then, I've just had this idea for a No Email Day campaign. I wrote a blog about it in April, and I wrote a short manifesto a couple of months ago. Put that up online.
It's an interesting point that you make there, that you wrote a blog about it and you've put your manifesto on SlideShare. I know that you're sharing this on Twitter as well, and there's a Facebook group too. In a way, those are places where you have ongoing tasks as well. So would that make things a bit easier, I guess? I mean, you could just put out a signal saying, well, I'm not going to use my email today, but you can probably reach me everywhere else as it stands.
Yeah, I'm not totally anti-email. I'm just saying, wanting people to think a bit more carefully about their email usage, because it's not always the most efficient way to communicate with someone. So, for example, the other day I counted that I had just over 70 emails on one day. And when I looked at it, a lot of those emails were from the same person. And really, they could have just saved all their questions up and put them in a single email instead of just banging them out one after another. Or even better, they could have just picked up the phone, or they could have come and spoken to me face to face, and we could have sorted everything out straight away. So the campaign is to try and get people to think of alternative forms of communication. Email isn't always the best way to do things. Yes, emails are great for confirming things or sending further information to back up what you've agreed on. But there's a lot of time wasted just by emails going backwards and forwards between people. I'm not the only person to think in this way. There's a guy called Luis Suarez. His job title, community builder and social computing evangelist at IBM. Now, Luis, he's gone almost 4 years without corporate email. If someone at a company like IBM can do it, then why can't everyone else? And what Luis is doing is he's moved all of his email conversations away from email and into a more open, collaborative space. So he uses Twitter for real-time updates on what's happening, but he also uses Google+ for open, useful resources and documents and articles that he wants his collaborators and people that he works with to see. And then he's also got the internal IBM social network, which I believe is called Beehive.
How far do you think you personally could take this? Do you think you could make the move, as you mentioned, the gentleman who's now not using his email for up to 4 years? Do you think you could totally walk away?
I'm not there yet. I'm trying very hard, and I am getting better at it. Since I've started trying to adopt this zero inbox strategy, I've come across some great resources. There's a fantastic book called Bits Literacy by a guy called Mark Hurst. He's got some good strategies for trying to end up with an empty inbox at the end of every single day. Now, I'm not quite there yet, but some days I am, and definitely this week I got down to zero emails on Friday,
It's interesting that you talk about inbox zero, but sometimes it points to a way in which we use email as well, because not only is it just emails that are actionable, sometimes it's information you might want to keep or a reminder of something you might want to do the following week, and that might be a reason to keep it. So is inbox zero really something that we could go for, or is there, can you balance this and sort of say, well, okay, maybe I might keep some of them for a particular reason?
Well, I do have a lot of folders in my email, so it's not just inbox, sent folder, deleted. You know, I have my inbox, which has got loads of subfolders within there, and what I find is actually I know exactly where to find the information compared to some of my colleagues or people that I've worked with before who have everything in their inbox. Some people have got thousands and thousands of emails in their inbox. They don't file anything away. And actually, they don't know where to find the information. They think that that's okay, and they might be comfortable with that, but those same people don't seem to be on top of the information. Like if you ask them a question or say, oh, did you get that email or do you remember this? In my experience, most of them aren't as on top of it as if you have a strategy in place for filing important information away so you know where to find it at a later date.
So given that we probably won't be able to contact you via email on the 11th of November, yeah, how can we find you before then if we want to find out more or indeed try this for ourselves?
Ideally, I'd love everyone to read the manifesto. You can find that on SlideShare. Probably the easiest or most useful way to do that is to follow us on Twitter, and that's at NoEmailDayHQ, or to go on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NoEmailDay.
And that's all we have time for again.
And everyone can still get in touch, even if they decide not to use their email.
Of course, you can email me if you're still emailing, maybe just not on November the 11th, but you can email me at outriders@bbc.co.uk. If you're not using your email, you can reach us on Facebook by searching for Outriders, or indeed tweet my way on Twitter, where we are BBC_Outriders.
On digital and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live. BBC.co.uk/5Live.